Jason Waller here, True Underdog Podcast and YouTube channel. Listen, make sure you subscribe today. You can go to iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can go to our YouTube channel, True Underdog, or you can visit trueunderdog.com and subscribe to all of it.
Damn, 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 True Underdog. Damn, damn, unleash damn, the power within. Damn, damn, damn.
Jason Waller here, True Underdog Podcast. I have got a show for you guys today. All the underdogs, all the listeners out there, listen. We've got two gentlemen right here, and today's theme is lean, mean, and clean. Simplicity wins. I've got Ajay Prakash and James June, co-founded Rinse, a laundry and dry cleaning app started by college friends. And in 2013, now, Ajay, you were the COO and CFO at Humble Browns, a consumer product startup, and you had experience at Bonobos, Berkshire Partners, the MBA, and Bain & Company. And then James was a wealth care investor at Essex Woodlands and a product manager at Green Tech and a consultant at Monitor Group. Guys, how are you guys doing right now?
Doing great. Thanks for having us.
Well, hey, I bring the energy, so I hope you guys are ready to have some energy, right? There's nothing small about this show. We like to go big all the time. So let's jump right to it. So, you know, welcome to the show. And listen, it's over for to you, James. You got your MBA from Harvard Business School, but it was your parents owning a dry cleaning storefront where you helped them as a kid and is the real link to the story. Take us way back and share with the listeners your childhood experiences.
Yeah. So I'm the son of immigrants, and my parents worked together at a dry cleaning store. They put me to work when I was really young. So weekends, summer, I was at the shop helping them out. And, you know, part of the reason why I studied so hard is because I didn't want to do what they were doing because it was so hard. It was, you know, it was a sort of classic motivation just to work hard so that I could use my mind to work, not necessarily my hands. And so I worked, I studied, I met Ajay in college in 1999, you know, worked in healthcare and in consulting, got my MBA. You know, and I think back in 2013, sort of tinkering with the idea of starting my own thing, actually in healthcare, I had no intention of going back to dry cleaning. But it's, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, at that time growing up, my parents, my extended family, we all talk about dry cleaning during family get-togethers. This is dry cleaning. So we talk shop nonstop. More so over the last 10 years or so, the conversation's really turned towards, hey, where's the business? Where are the customers? And so that kind of pain point from a business owner perspective has always stuck with me. And you know, 8 years ago, I was meeting up with Ajay for breakfast to talk about startup ideas. And I just visited my parents' store near breakfast. And, you know, it's one thing to hear about how business is slow. And then you kind of see it in front of your eyes. And it's just, you know, that image of just an empty storefront, no foot traffic, really stuck with me. So I was prepared to talk about healthcare with Ajay, but I couldn't stop thinking and talking about that very visceral pain point of the ones that my parents were facing.
That's how entrepreneurs' minds think. So Ajay, back to you. I mean, you got your MBA from Stanford, a graduate school of business, and you worked across many array of industries. Let's talk about those days as well, till you guys collided.
Yeah, sure. So after college, you know, I did kind of a traditional business path. I did consulting. I worked in private equity for a couple of years, and then I went to business school at Stanford. And actually, it was my summer at business school where I did this internship at a startup in New York called Bonobos, which had, you know, seven people just selling pants. And for me, it just ended up being one of these experiences where I fell in love right away because I was able to have an impact immediately. Things I was thinking about that day, we could implement literally later that day or the next day, and you could start seeing results, and things just moved a lot faster. And I kind of fell in love with the focus on the consumer, right? Putting myself in the customer shoes and thinking about how can I create a better experience. And so when I graduated from business school, I knew I wasn't going to go back to the finance world. I was going to try and do more of the consumer early stage startup world. And I didn't have the idea of my own. So I joined someone who was just taking a product to market as his first hire. I was the COO and CFO, got experience around fundraising, around, you know, building something from ground up. Made a ton of mistakes, did some things well. But at the end of the day, you know, we wrapped that up in 2012. And I left it knowing that I wanted to start my own thing. And so actually, you know, James talked about that breakfast. Prior to that breakfast in 2013, I'd been spending months thinking about, like, what's the idea that's going to get me super excited to make that leap? And I had narrowed in on a couple trends, right? One was just bringing technology to old school industries. And then the other was looking at existing customer experiences and seeing where there's a lot of friction and thinking about how can you remove the friction, just make it easier. And I had a bunch of ideas I was thinking about, but none that really got me excited. And then, you know, fateful day where James comes in, I thought we were going to talk about healthcare for him. And he just said, hey, I can't get this idea out of my head. Is there something we could do with dry cleaning? And it was one of those moments for me where the bells kind of went off, where I was like, you know, dry cleaning is actually perfect for the trends I'm looking at. James is actually someone I'd always viewed as a potential co-founder. I mean, I've known him now for 22 years, I guess. But, you know, I wasn't planning to go into healthcare. I didn't think he wanted to come into a consumer-focused business. But then I think maybe most importantly was, you know, he just had this intimate understanding of the supply side of it, right? He had grown up in dry cleaning. He understood it. I had a good understanding of the customer-facing side of the world, the startup side of the world. And the bells went off and we decided to run after it.
That's really good. So being partners, I have a business partner as well that I've been involved with three businesses. So I totally get it. I met my business partner and he's my best friend in fifth grade. And it's really a yin and a yang. Everything I am, he's not. Everything he is, I'm not. Is your guys' dynamic relationship similar to that?
Yeah, you know, I think we complement each other really well. There's certainly some skills that overlap, but in general, you know, the way we set it up early on was I was kind of, I mean, if you think about James's parents at the dry cleaner, I was kind of his mom at the front of the house dealing with customers. He was his dad in the back of the house dealing with the operations and the clothes. And, you know, we divided and conquered that way. And, you know, we've been able to grow together like that. But the big thing, and I'm sure you've seen this with your friend that you've partnered with, is just co-founding a company with someone, it's akin to a marriage. And so it's been really about, you know, even though I've known James forever socially, we had never worked together. And so spending a lot of time in those early days, really making sure we understood each other's working styles, expectations, we were communicating, giving each other feedback. I think constant communication tends to be the thread that's kept us going and kept this relationship strong.
Now you guys bootstrapped this business and built it from the ground up, correct?
Early on we did. Yeah. We started off, you know, just bootstrapping on our own. We wanted to prove it out and feel really good that there was an idea here that we were excited about and had a lot of conviction on before taking outside capital. So we did that, you know, we invested in on our own kind of initially getting the service up and running, testing with customers, getting that early response. And I think after about 6 or 7 months, we then raised a friends and family round to bring on our technical co-founder, Sam, you know, start really investing more in marketing. And then since then we've raised investment rounds over the past 8 years.
Yeah. And also similar to your story, Jason, you know, we didn't pay ourselves for almost 2 years.
Oh, so hey, you did some background checks on my story. I love it. Good.
I think it's one of those things where, you know, you need to take care of your people first. You know, we were in a fortunate position enough to save something. And, you know, it's sort of our passion project. And so that's what it meant to us. It's like, hey, look, I want to reinvest that potential salary back into the company. And, you know, so that's sort of, I still remember those days. You know, it was definitely tough. It wasn't easy.
A lot of entrepreneurs miss that boat. It's about getting rich. It's not about reinvesting in the business. And I remember, you know, I've got four kids, but when I, you know, the first business I opened up, my wife was pregnant with our second kid. And I just remember peanut butter and jellies, ramen noodles. Like there was no, I mean, that's it. That's what we went to Pace or Costco and we loaded up. That was it. Like, I'm like, look, like, we got to buckle down. I'm not getting a paycheck. And, you know, when you're betting on yourself, like you two guys did, you know, your employees and your team and your other, you know, your other co-founder, they're all in when they see that. I think that's key for listeners to understand that, you know, when you build a foundation in a company, it's stronger. You know, this get rich quick thing, that doesn't last long. At least I haven't seen it in the three businesses I built. I feel like pain and struggle have made me stronger and made me learn, right? I got a quote for you guys. Rents can be a multi-billion dollar business operating just in the U.S. This was from the head of Arena Ventures, Paige Craig, which funded Series A round for Rents. What's Rents' USP that differentiates itself from its competitors in the market?
You know, it's an interesting market, and it's interesting when you think about the customer experience, because as we looked at it, there wasn't one big point of friction to solve. It wasn't like there's a silver bullet that makes this amazing experience. It's just that there are a ton of pieces of friction along the customer journey, whether it's on how you sign up, how you schedule, getting pickup and delivery, what hours, the quality of cleaning, all of that sort of stuff. And the approach that we've taken has we've looked at all those points of friction. We call it death by a thousand cuts. And we said on the customer facing side, let's systematically remove the death by a thousand cuts, create this seamless experience from start to finish, and really provide one simple solution for everything in the closet for the customer. And it came at a time when, you know, the iPhone was blowing up and people were starting to use it as the remote control of their life. And, you know, I think people who had in this space, in the past had tried to build a national brand or do something in dry cleaning, they'd always looked at people like James's parents and said, oh, we're just going to build a nicer store and we're going to, you know, destroy them. And it's really hard to compete with existing cleaners, right? And I think what we said is, hey, let's actually embrace the fact there are some really good cleaners out there. There's existing infrastructure out there, and let's work with them to create an even better experience and let them do what they do best, which is clean the clothes. And so I think as we've continued to evolve in this space, we've been very laser focused on, we have a goal of, you know, being the dominant national brand in this space. And when we started, there were a lot of companies that were coming in and they were building really nice mobile apps focused on this. And they were focusing on the flash. And we were really focused on the operations and the execution, because it's a really hard, complicated business. And for us, we've looked at every single piece of the puzzle and said, hey, how can we make it better? And I think for us, it's not about like, hey, one of those areas is the best. It's just that we're the best at doing it across the board and creating this much better experience for the customers, for the cleaners, for our valets, our drivers, who are all W-2 employees. We've been focusing on making it a win-win-win for everybody. And I think that's a big differentiator for us.
That's big. James, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's one thing, this is going to sound shocking, but the one approach that we've taken is to really be customer-centric, is to focus on the customer. And tell you, as a small business owner, you know, if I look at someone like my parents, that's not always easy to do. Because let's say you're an angry customer, am I going to make you whole and then take food off the table for my kids? They're like real trade-offs where when you're subscale, that sort of, hey, keep the customer first. It's hard. I understand that. We've taken that approach of making our customers' lives easier by systematically dismantling those death by a thousand cuts, those multiple friction points. And it's just by being just obsessive with that. It's one of those things that we just keep iterating. How can we make it better? How can we make it better? How can we make it better? It's such a unique experience where we come to your door, pick up, and then we bring you your clothes back. It's two legs. There's so many touch points online, offline. And it's been this 8-year journey where we're just focused on that. And I think that, you know, the focus on the process, the journey, leads to great outcomes. I'm not necessarily thinking about the multi-billion dollar thing. I'm thinking, how can you make this so good? The rest will take care of itself, is really what our approach is.
Sounds like you're staying in the moment, which is smart. And I love how you said you guys are always getting better. I have a chapter in my book coming out soon, AGB, always getting better. You're never perfect. You can't settle. You just keep grinding, stay in the moment. So I've been a judge in a show called 2-Minute Drill. Season 2 comes out soon. I love to hear a pitch of a company for the listeners out there. Give you like a 2-minute pitch. Who wants to try to pitch your guys' brand? Who's the pitch guy out of you two? Somebody's able to pitch it. Your 2-minute elevator pitch. What is it? I'm going to put you guys on a spot, baby. I pitch my product all the time. I'm the front runner, right? And I love what I do. And my business partner, Kevin, his knees will buckle. He will fall down. He'll throw up before he pitches anything. That's okay, because he looks at spreadsheets. I don't even know what I'm doing. And, you know, he sees things that I don't see here, and I see things there and I miss here. So like you said, people compliment each other, but you got to have somebody that says, hey, what is Rinse? What is this about? You know, you're raising money. What's that 2-minute pitch? What's that look like?
Sure. Well, Rinse, our goal is to make trips to the dry cleaner and the washer and dryer entirely obsolete while building the first dominant national brand in clothing care. We are attacking a very fragmented market and focusing on the customer from a customer-centric approach. Building technology, people, and process to provide the best experience for customers, but also to leverage the existing infrastructure so that we can build a process and technology layer on top of an existing infrastructure and have a very scalable asset-light model.
That's a pretty solid pitch, guys. I mean, you know, that's a solid pitch. I would not have any questions on that pitch. That was solid. You guys explained almost every single thing there. You guys said you're still raising money. You're trying to grow the business. What was your revenue last year?
Well, so we actually don't share numbers just for competitive
reasons.
Okay. But I think, you know, for us, what we've been focused on is being the dominant national brand. You know, we're right now in the Bay Area, we're in Los Angeles, we're in DC, Chicago, and Boston. And, you know, I think for us in all of those markets, you know, we view ourselves as the number one or two player.
And those are big markets for what you guys do. I mean, that's pretty big.
Yeah. And I think for us, what we've learned, actually, it's interesting. James talks about kind of chipping away, continuously improving, making it better. We've been really focusing on refining our playbook for getting a market up and running, getting a market to profitability. All of our markets are profitable. And the key that we've realized is that we have the technology and the processes to launch a new market and get it up and running very quickly. And we've also learned, now we're in 5 major markets, that all these markets are very similar, right? They're similar from a consumer behavior standpoint, similar from a competitive dynamic standpoint. And so for us, we feel very confident. You know, 8 years in, we really focused on the foundation, but now we're at a point where we feel really confident that the foundation's strong and this is ready to go more national. And so when you think about raising capital, we're looking right now at growth capital that allows us to expand and really accelerate what we've been doing.
That part of the game is exciting. I mean, we're getting ready to do a private equity event here soon. We did one a couple of years ago, minority investment. We're going to do another minority one, then try to go public. But just pitching to these, you know, Goldman Sachs and Blackstone is exciting. I love it. That is like the most favorite thing I get to do. It's a 6.5 hour process, but I love it. And so having a great pitch and understanding your business is key, and understanding your marketplace, which you just explained. It's never always been bright light, you know, rainbows and, you know, sunshine. There's been some hurdles. Let's talk about that. This is the true underdog podcast. You've had to overcome some things. You know, we'll start with you, James. What is the hardest thing that you've had to overcome since running Rents? And then we'll go to you, Ajay.
I think it's getting over myself. And I'm going to tell you what that means. It's, you know, as a founder, you know, I have kind of this bias of like, I can do this thing better than anyone else can. Right. And I can give you an example where when we first started, I drove a lot and I personally pitched our first 300 or so customers, went to their door. And, you know, we got to a point about a year or so in where I realized, wow, I'm spending every single night of the week on the road till midnight. And I realized like, I'm the bottleneck, because I could actually be, you know, in my mind, I was thinking there's no one out there who can pitch better than I can. There's no one out there who can like introduce a new customer or product, but I had to let go. And I wish I let go a lot sooner. And I wish I, you know, built better training, better onboarding to get other people to get to that level, because I could have been using that time to do it, to do other stuff. So part of this is letting go, delegating, and kind of getting over myself that, hey, I'm the best. Cause it's not about that. It's about surrounding yourselves with people who can run and make you better, make the whole team better. But that took a while for me to understand.
Yeah. It's hard to trust people. It's hard to let go. You have a control problem. I have the same problem. The only reason we were able to grow is they shipped me to Michigan when our operations were in North Carolina. So I wouldn't have my fingers in everything and I could forward think, right? Because I'm the same way. And so it benefited everybody, kind of keeping me out of the weeds a little bit and scaling. But it is a hard thing to do as an entrepreneur. Listeners need to understand, the only way you scale is duplicate and replicate. You can't sit here and do everything yourself. You can't be great at everything. Okay, Ajay, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say there's two things. You know, one is really just scaling myself. I think as the organization has scaled, it was easier when it was out of my living room. It was just me and James. And even though, you know, yeah, he was driving and we were doing all that, you feel like there's more control and it's not that hard to, as long as you have conviction, it's not that hard to get going. But I think as the business grows, as you bring on more employees, as you bring on more investors, I think the challenge for anyone who's a founder or a leader in an organization is to continue to scale themselves so that they are the best person for the company at that time in that role. And I think that for me, you know, I'm very motivated to continue to grow, continue to learn, always get better, but certainly I've had to try to sprint ahead and learn, you know, so that I'm meeting or matching the pace of the company's growth, and that can be challenging. I think, you know, the second thing, which is interrelated in that, is that, you know, when we closed our seed round, James mentioned the first 2 years not taking a salary. When we closed our first institutional round, my first daughter was born 3 days later, and I have two more since then. So I've had 3 kids since building Rent. So I think really just making sure I'm managing my time, being very deliberate about how I spend my time on Rents and how I prioritize and be very open to delegate and I don't have to be involved in everything. I think that is a very important thing, but really just managing that so I can be, you know, the best person I can be for Rents, but also be the best husband and father I can be for my family.
And that's a tough balance. I mean, you said it, Jay. I mean, I can relate. I've got 4 kids and now 2 grandkids. I'm only 41, so I've obviously been busy, but I always say quality over quantity. You know, the kids might not see me enough, but the moments you spend with them, you got to make them count, right? You kids and children and wives and folks, they remember memories. They don't remember, dad was available every day, 2 to 10. He was here to see me. But they remember special dinners, you know, doing prayer, reading a book, doing something fun with them. I always try to make every day I can with them bigger than it should be. So it's quality over quantity. It's something I've tried to adapt to the last 2 years because I'm always grinding. And you know, we get stuck. We're like, we're grinding too much. We got to go do this. We feel guilty. But our business is like our child. You know, it's our child. We're growing it. You got to show it love or it doesn't grow. And so you got to find that balance, and good for you for doing that. Now, I've had other successful entrepreneurs on here, like a good friend of mine, Brian Scudamore. I don't know if you know him, but he took the company Junk Removal and updated it by putting, like you guys did, customers first and saw exponential growth. I mean, the guy's, you know, on pace to do a ton of business and break records continuously. There'll always be a growing number of competitors in the $40 billion industry that you're in. Do you have plans to take rents outside of the U.S.? And what do the next few years look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting because dry cleaning and laundry is a universal service and a universal need. And there are, over the past 8 years, as we've been building rents, there have been startups and companies that have shown up not only in the U.S., but every country around the globe. So I think there's certainly global potential. I mean, for us, you know, it's really, we don't want to start focusing on global potential when we're still really trying to figure out a really large market in the U.S. But I think over the next few years, the main focus is to continue to deliver on sort of the initial vision of being that national brand. We've spent so much time, you know, as I've mentioned, really making the foundation rock solid and scalable. And now I think the next few years is really accelerating and focusing on that scale. So expanding to new markets, continuing to innovate on the customer experience, potentially looking at some acquisitions and consolidation within the space. I think one thing we've seen in the space, you know, there are a lot of entrants and the barriers to entry are super low. It's actually not hard to start serving customers and doing dry cleaning laundry. I mean, James and I ran a test a week after we first talked about it. So it's not hard to get started, but it is very hard to scale this business because there are so many moving pieces. There's so much operational complexity. And I think, you know, for us, we've seen a lot of entrants come and go. We've actually acquired a handful of startups that were shutting down along the way. But our goal here is, you know, we're ready. The foundation's ready for us to really take this to the rest of the country. And that's the big focus over the next few years.
No, that's great. What about COVID? The big bad COVID. You guys are running out of California right now. I was just telling you guys before this started, Michigan's finally lifting some rules and it could be a little bit normal here. But with the pandemic, and I know that it affected your business. Talk about what it did to your business and then how you can COVID-proof your business in the future. So other listeners out here, because I know some other folks in your industry have struggled. What did you guys do different and what should people do for the future to COVID-proof their company?
Yeah, I mean, COVID is a fascinating case study, right? It's very hard to see this, something like this coming. So I think, you know, for us, just in terms of COVID, obviously it hit us, you know, dry cleaning took a big hit. That was half our business at the time. Laundry remained somewhat stable, which has been good. For us, we're very focused on execution. So the first thing we did was just, we made sure that we could continue to operate while, you know, maintaining safety, reducing the risk of transmission. And it was at a time when there was all this new information flow and stuff coming in and it was very confusing. And so we were trying to stay ahead of that. But I think at the end of the day, our team is super resilient. You know, they specialize in the exceptional situations and they were able to really put us in a position to succeed in terms of our service. And the big thing we did from a business standpoint, and this is the advice I'd give anybody, which we've had to learn the hard way, is we were, prior to COVID, we were approaching profitability. We had taken a lot of time in 2019 and early 2020, bringing our costs down, focusing on the scalability and profitability of the model. You know, prior to that, there was a point where we were burning $1 million of cash a month, right? And had we been doing that going into COVID, there's no way we would have come out of it. But I think for us, we were in a really good position when COVID hit to kind of, you know, buckle down, navigate, and continue to serve the customers and execute and put ourselves in a position where right now we're starting to see some recovery, less in the Bay Area, which is our biggest market. But, you know, outside of California, we're seeing, you know, our markets are all at pre-COVID levels or above. And I think we've put ourselves in this position to emerge with strength, to take advantage of a lot of the consumer trends that are shifting towards online services, pickup and delivery, you know, having a trusted brand, to capitalize on the fact that, you know, unfortunately, a lot of dry cleaners didn't make it through COVID, aren't going to make it through COVID, and there's going to be a lot of demand coming our way. And I think a lot of it has been the resilience of the team and really following our guiding principles, our core values of just, you know, we say make mom proud, you know, customer is the North Star. We have a handful of embrace change and ambiguity. That's something that's big for startups. You just never know what's coming around the corner. So I think it's just been the team working together to navigate and putting ourselves in a position prior to that to be able to withstand the revenue hit.
Yeah, I would double down on that last statement for your listeners. Establishing core values, a vision statement, the dream. You need to get it on paper and talk about it nonstop so that when challenging, unforeseen circumstances arise, at least mentally your employees are ready for it. So do that now, because you'll whether it's COVID or something else, something will hit. It's just a matter of time eventually. And if you can fall back on guiding principles, core values, that's going to align and focus your employees instead of resulting in panic. Because that is your North Star, that is your map. And so I would have your listeners put that on paper and start preaching right now.
Yeah, I love what you guys just said. And I think I say this all the time. You guys know the difference between a buffalo and a cow?
I listened to your podcast. I'm going to say no, but I did hear you explain the answer. So it's a very good analogy.
Well, that's what this reminds me of, though. So a cow runs from the storm. And a lot of people during the COVID, a lot of companies, a lot of entrepreneurs out there, a lot of small business owners, they got scared. They shut their doors. They didn't fight back. They turned in their chips. And I feel like you guys didn't. You pivot and change. And what can you do to get better? And how can you get better? And you guys came together and, you know, you saw an opportunity. And that's the difference. And a buffalo runs right through the damn storm, right? He goes and takes it on. And I love that, what you guys did. And I love hearing these stories of these companies that not only survived COVID, but you even mentioned other markets, you're better than pre-COVID numbers. And, you know, that's extraordinary because of your guys' leadership skills, because of you guys not taking no for an answer, running from a problem or making an excuse. You know, I'm trying to surround myself in this world and talk to people that are finding reasons to do things, not finding reasons to not do things, right? Because so many times you hear people, well, I can't do that because of this. And I lose my mind. I blow a gasket. I'm like, dude, I don't want to hear that shit. I want to hear I can do this because of that. If it's not something I want, then show me something else we can do. We need solutions. And it sounds like you two and your dynamic partnership, you guys get it done. I mean, kudos to you guys because you're building a great business. You overcame, I mean, in your industry, I could see how, you know, a pandemic can cripple, shut down so many companies like that. I mean, people aren't going to work. You know, it's an issue. And you guys still overcame that. And then you've got a great product out there and you're continuing to build. You know, you're building your family, you're building your business. I love to hear stories like that. And I think the listeners out there will appreciate this. Let me ask one final question of both of you guys. So you told me the hardship. What thing are you most proud of? Jay, you go first. What thing are you most proud of first?
You know, it's interesting because when you're in the middle of this journey, it's very hard to step back and reflect and think about what we've accomplished. But, you know, every once in a while, we get an email from a customer saying how we've changed their lives. They have, they're off of surgery or they have some handicap and they can't do this type of service. We get emails about saving marriages. I get emails from former employees about how the learning at Rinse and the development made a huge difference in their next job. And so I think that's the stuff I'm most proud of is the impact we've had over the years. And it's something I rarely have the time to step back and think about, or James and I actually probably never talk about it, but we, you know, I think one of these days, once we get through COVID, maybe we can have a drink and talk about it. But I think that's probably the thing that sticks out right now.
It's a similar answer. I think just I my happiness is really dependent on other people being successful and happy. And so whether it's our cleaning partners who were struggling and we partner with them and they're able to make rents or grow their business, to ex employees who have gone and done some great things, like that really makes my day. It really does. So that, you know, that's the ability to have long lasting impactful change and seeing other people grow on to become great things. You know, and I tell people in our company, hey, you know, I want you to work here because you believe in our mission and you're going to learn skills that you'll take to any other job. I really hope that you stay here for 30 years and get your gold watch and retire with us. That's not going to happen, I can tell you right now. And so I want you to go away with this, be better in your life, develop your career. That really does make me happy.
Well, how can everybody find you guys? How can they connect to your business and find out about you too?
Yeah, I mean, we're at rinse.com is the website. Lots of information there. I mean, you know, aj@rinse.com, james@rinse.com is the email if anyone ever wants to reach out. But, you know, we love talking to entrepreneurs.
Does Rinse have a Instagram or Facebook?
We do. Yeah. You know, Facebook is /Rinse. Twitter is @Rinse. Instagram is Rinse_Inc. So yeah, you can check us out there as well. And we have mobile apps.
Oh, see, I need mobile app. My Twitter game's weak. My Instagram and Facebook game's great. My Twitter game is weak. I got to work on Twitter. Well, listen, guys, this was exciting. You know, listeners out there, you got a dynamic duo here, partners that come from different walks of life, different ideas, one in healthcare, one in dry cleaning, came together, a platform they're building, creating jobs, creating business in a billion-dollar industry, overcame a pandemic. This is what it's about, a true underdog story. Kudos to you guys. Bam!